What this rather long, complicated title translates into for me is that print materials for parents can actually work in getting them to increase their parental monitoring behaviors, which is a big question that I've had for a number of years and have had a lot of doubt expressed to me that that would be possible. So that's what I'm here to talk about. And as Kathleen already pointed out, research on parenting behaviors has connected it to adolescent sexual behaviors, but I just thought it was worth mentioning again that in our formative research with our population, we did find that adolescents are more likely to have had sex if they report being unsupervised after school, particularly between the hours of 3 and 5 o'clock. If they report lower parental monitoring knowledge on the part of their parents, that is, that their parents know less about their whereabouts, companions, and activities. And also if they perceive that there are fewer family rules about friends and dating, thereby fewer limits on their behaviors and more opportunities for them to have sex. Now you can think about parental monitoring knowledge from two perspectives, the parent and the adolescent. So what this graph is showing you are parent and adolescent responses to three questions. So does the parent know where the adolescent is after school, at night, and does the parent ask the adolescent where he or she is going? So these data are from our formative work in which the parent and adolescent pairs are not matched families, but these pattern of responses match a lot of other research that I have done in which parent and adolescent pairs are matched. And what's typically the case is that the parent almost always believes that they know more about what their kids are up to than their kids think. Okay, and this can happen for a lot of different reasons. Parents might have sources of information about their children's activities that the kids just don't know about, so they might be gaining information from neighbors, from other people. Also, the kids might be less than honest and forthcoming in talking to their parents about what they're up to. And then there could just be also basic differences in perception and memory and so on. But what we do find fairly consistently is that it's the adolescent reports of parental monitoring behaviors that have an impact or have the best impact on the adolescent behaviors themselves. The adolescent reports are most predictive. So that's, in fact, what we're trying to get at here. We'd like to get parents to be better monitors of their children such that their kids perceive that their parents are doing that and thereby have an impact on risk behavior. So when we were trying to develop this intervention, we were facing a number of challenges. First, just the sheer size of the population that we were trying to reach was daunting. We were trying to have an impact on over 30,000 families. So just by definition, we were going to be forced into a mindset of having to come up with something that could be delivered to lots of people inexpensively and in a very feasible way. Also, the nature of our population is probably similar to a lot of parenting populations. These families are very busy. They often have more than one job, lots of competing priorities, not much in the way of free time. This is a highly mobile population, so they move around a lot. There are lots of different languages being spoken at home. Not all, but many of the families are poor, and many of them have poor reading skills, both in English and in their language of origin. So we had a lot of things that we were trying to confront. And then finally, we had our school challenges in terms of the low resources available at the schools. So we didn't have schools with a lot of money to spend on programs or a lot of staff time that they could devote to prevention activities or class time that they could give up. So our solution was to come up with something that was simple, practical, feasible, and easy to do. So we had a bilingual intervention that places low demands on both the schools and the parents. So we're not asking schools to provide staff to conduct lengthy and multiple workshops, and we're not asking parents to find the time to attend lengthy and multiple workshops. Whereas what we are doing is we're giving them these print materials that parents can pick up at a moment when they do have a free minute or two. They can look it over, they can put it back down, they can pick it up, put it back down, whenever they have time without really missing anything. So the focus of the parent intervention is on parents themselves. So there's nothing in this intervention that's directly targeting the adolescents, although there are activities that encourage parents to work with their adolescents. The intervention goals are to increase or improve parental monitoring knowledge, so parents' knowledge about, generally speaking, what their kids are up to, so their whereabouts, their activities, their companions, and then increasing, more specifically, parents' use of and, more importantly, enforcement of rules about friends and dating. So finding ways to limit their children's opportunities to be getting themselves into trouble. And then also asking parents to find ways to increase the amount of after-school supervision that their children are receiving. Now, one thing I want to point out here is that we were very careful not to be implying that we're trying to fix bad parents. We're in the intervention materials and throughout all of our dealings with parents, we acknowledge that parents, by and large, are doing a lot of this stuff already. They're engaging in a lot of monitoring efforts. They're doing the best job that they can. But what we're trying to do with these materials is give them some information and skills that can help improve those efforts and make them more effective. Okay, so we have three education modules in booklet form: keeping track of your kids, getting more involved in your kids' lives, and the after-school hours. And it is our intention to completely saturate the environment. So we sent these three modules to every parent in our intervention, middle, and high schools, and that is about 33,000 families. On top of that, and that was in intervention year one, in intervention years two and three, we sent the modules out again to all the newly incoming parents of sixth and ninth graders. So again, we're trying to really get it out there and hit as many families as we can in our intervention schools. Now, the content of the interventions is based on prior scientific research on parenting, on our own formative research findings with the population that we're addressing, and with our direct experience with that population. Our materials are all culturally appropriate and all have been translated into Spanish. They've been professionally designed and extensively reviewed by school personnel and by parent community advisory boards. Just because I think they're so cool looking, I thought I'd spend a few slides showing them to you. These are the covers of the three different modules. And this slide shows you how on one page we have the materials in English, and then on the facing page we have the same materials in Spanish. So each module contains both the English and Spanish language. And then we also tried to make the materials very visually appealing and providing lots of different examples and lots of practical tips for parents. So we provide a lot of different things and acknowledge that not everything is going to work in every family, but here are just some ideas for parents to think about trying. And then finally, in every module, we had a section at the end called Things to Do and Think About. And here is where we tried to get parents to engage with their adolescents. So we came up with some ideas about things that parents could do activity-wise with their kids to improve their knowledge of their kids and their involvement with their kids. And we also tried to ask parents some questions just to get them thinking about their own families, their own situation, their own monitoring behaviors, and think about ways to focus some of this information and ways to improve things in their own families. So we're evaluating this intervention in a number of ways. One thing we did was sent out a postcard included with the third module to all families in which we're essentially collecting process data. So we wanted to know if parents had in fact received all of the modules, did they find them useful, that kind of thing. Then we also sent home with students a parent survey to assess some of the parenting behaviors that we're trying to change. And this would allow us to do some intervention control comparisons. The primary way that we're evaluating this intervention level is through the yearly adolescent survey, both a cross-sectional longitudinal survey with intervention and control students that include parental monitoring scales and a scale about rules about friends and dating, as well as after-school supervision. And then since then, we've also added on another parent phone survey to supplement the one that we had sent home to parents. So I'm going to be talking just about the adolescent data today. So on the student survey, there is a measure about perceived parental monitoring knowledge. So it's a mean of six items measuring students' perceptions of how much their parents know about their whereabouts, companions, and activities. So how much do your parents generally know about what's going on with what you're doing? So an example item is, my parents know where I am after school. The family rules about friends and dating scale is a mean of seven items, which was reverse scored, measuring students' perceptions about the rules that their family has about the time that they spend with their friends and dating partners. So for example, I can stay out as late as I want on weekend nights. For data analysis, I looked at both the cross-sectional and the longitudinal sample, because as Kathleen pointed out, because this is, in a way, the most individual of our interventions. We're trying to change individual parent behavior. It's important to be able to look at it both at the population level and at the individual family level. So for cross-sectional sample, we did an analysis of variance in which we controlled for gender and age. And then longitudinal sample, we did both logistic and multiple regression in which we controlled for age and grade, and in some of the analyses for race, ethnicity, and for the experimental condition. And also, as Kathleen pointed out, these are very preliminary analyses. We've really not had the opportunity to really do formal analyses looking at appropriate covariates and appropriate moderators that we will be doing as follow-up here. So one thing I wanted to talk about first before getting to the analyses of the intervention effects is that, you know, because people sometimes question if we're trying to change adolescent sexual behavior, you know, going after parent monitoring behavior seems like a far stretch. It seems pretty far removed. But I wanted to just point out that we do find a longitudinal link between parent monitoring and subsequent adolescent sexual behavior. It does predict. So for students who were not sexually active at wave one, those who perceived more family rules at wave one had about half the odds of having engaged in sex at wave three as those who perceived fewer family rules. And likewise, those who perceived greater parent monitoring at either wave one or wave two had lower odds of sex at wave three. So we're seeing a nice prediction of these parent monitoring behaviors of adolescent sexual behavior at the later waves. Now, another thing that people often say about parent behaviors is that, well, okay, maybe parents can have an impact on their kids' behavior before they've had sex. But once kids have started having sex, then it's no longer going to work. Well, what we found in our longitudinal data, again, is that for students who were sexually active at either wave one or wave two, the more family rules that they perceived at wave one, the lower their odds of having sex in the last 3 months at wave three. So more family rules predicted lower recent sexual activity among sexually active kids. So although we didn't find that sort of general parental monitoring effect, we did find an effect for those very kind of sex-specific types of monitoring behaviors that parents can engage in, can have an impact on sexually active kids as well. Okay. So the cross-sectional results. First, on an overall level, we found that reports of family rules about friends and dating increased across the board from wave one to wave two, and then decreased at wave three for everybody. But what we did find in terms of an intervention effect is that that bump up at wave two was sharper and stronger for the intervention students than it was for controls, and then the decline at wave three wasn't as great for the intervention students. So the intervention effect is that it caused a greater increase at wave two and then a slower decline at wave three. So just to show that graphically, you see that bump up at wave two being greater for the intervention group and then the decline at wave three being smaller for the intervention group. Now you might question why you get that bump up at wave two for the control students. And here I think we might be seeing a little bit of that transience effect that Kathleen talked about. So you might have some intervention kids who at wave one were intervention kids, then at wave two are in the control school, or it could be some intervention bleed over as well, because like we said, we did our best to separate out our intervention and control schools, but you get a bunch of parents who get some materials that are really great and useful, they're gonna share with their friends, and you know, it's not so clean and easy as you might like it to be. But in any case, we do find an encouraging intervention effect here. Now for cross-sectional, we did not find an overall intervention effect on that general monitoring behavior, but we do find it among the sixth graders. So if you remember, I said that at wave two, for the incoming sixth grade families, we sent out those monitoring modules again. We do see a bump up in the intervention kids at the sixth grade level. So at wave two, you compare the control and intervention on general monitoring, they're the same. Then at wave three, you do see an intervention effect for sixth graders, which makes some sense that sort of general monitoring behavior would be more impactful for younger children rather than older children. and you could see those specific rules about friends and dating be more impactful for the older kids. Developmentally, that makes some sense. Longitudinally, we find a very similar pattern. So what we've just seen are some population-level changes in these behaviors or perceptions of these behaviors. Here we're looking at changes within individual families across time. So here, the intervention condition predicted the change in family roles between waves 1 and 3. So again, we have both groups decreasing from wave 1 to wave 3, which is fairly common in the monitoring literature anyway. You find that parents kind of begin to decrease their monitoring efforts as their children get older and gain more independence, even though we find those monitoring efforts actually have an impact when their kids are older. That's something that we'd like to see change. But that is a general finding, that parents decrease overall as their kids get older. So again, we're seeing that same thing here with our longitudinal sample, that everybody is decreasing from wave 1 to wave 3, but our intervention families are decreasing less, so that decline is happening at a slower rate. So that intervention effect is maintaining those monitoring behaviors or those enforcement of family rules longer, which we'd like to see. And this is just the graphical representation of that. You see that nice increase at wave 2 and then the sort of slower decline at wave 3. For the longitudinal sample, we did not see the general monitoring effect. So overall, at least in the short term at this point, which is all we can speak to, our intervention was effective in increasing parents' use of rules about friends and dating. This happened both at the population level and at the individual family level across time, which is really encouraging. We're very excited about that. And then even for the general monitoring, we found a specific intervention effect in our cross-sectional sample for parental monitoring at the youngest ages. And again, this is somewhat expected, that you would expect those general monitoring things to have the most impact for the youngest age group. So a practical, feasible intervention targeting parents can work. We can, in fact, reach large numbers of parents and can change their behavior in meaningful ways, which is tremendously exciting for a parenting researcher like myself. Both being a parenting researcher and a public health researcher, this is like the greatest answer ever, that you can do something very simply and actually impact behavior. In the future, we're going to be obviously assessing these impacts longer term on monitoring family rules about friends and dating, and also after-school supervision, which I did not touch on today in the interest of time. We're also going to be enhancing those print materials by developing a DVD. So we're taking the essential content from the print materials, turning it into an interactive DVD in which we have some testimonials from parents and just a lot sort of livelier, more engaging mode of delivery of the same intervention messages that will help us deal with some of our literacy issues. And just generally, you know, people's preferred modes of learning vary. So some people learn better by reading, some people learn better by watching and hearing. And so the DVD will sort of enhance our intervention in that way. And then finally, we're of course going to be assessing that intervention effect on adolescent sexual behavior and outcomes. So for example, sexual initiation, number of sex partners, and STD. And that's all I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's open for discussion. Any questions? We don't have microphones, but so speak up.
I was just going to ask Christine.
We actually have it online. So the question was the big, huge, ugly, unwieldy. Actually, some people use it as artwork, but the question is, have we thought about putting it online? And we do have a website. It's, you know, we actually have probably a whole set of intervention activities that we didn't discuss here because we just don't have the time. One of them is that we created a website. And so the nurses can get that guide online. And we're trying to keep it so the website, so that they have to pick the right school to be able to get into it, because we know people share information. It's a difficult thing to do. But and we have not assessed yet whether or not people are accessing the guide online, but it is there. It is given only to the students who come in seeking it, but the poster, it depends on the school where the poster is. I know there's one high school where it's on the wall outside of the school-based health center, so a kid that doesn't feel comfortable going in and, you know, saying, I think I'm pregnant, or whatever it is, they can actually just look at the guide and take down their own information if they want.
So your question was on whether there's any education on sexuality and sex education. That's another intervention aspect that we didn't talk about as well. We are working with health teachers on teaching sexual behavioral issues related to sexual education. So that's one aspect, which is health teacher related. In terms of the condom availability program, we work with the distributors on a little training that comes from the district on giving out materials about how to use condoms and abstinence and STDs, but they don't. That one-on-one interaction is an opportunity for a student to talk to an open and accessible teacher or nurse about sexuality, but we don't train them specifically on sexuality education for those teachers and. The way that the question was whether the information to the student is verbal or handed out by just paper. The distributors of the condoms are trained to have a brief discussion with the students. So it's not just supposed to be, here's your condoms, here's your papers. You know, it's supposed to be a brief discussion to talk about it, because these are not health professionals. These are teachers, volunteer staff on campus. So it's more about building a relationship with an adult and talking to them about any other issues that might come up regards to condom use as well. Yes, the idea of using, the question was about using peer leaders and student leadership in the condom program outreach. And yes, we have had student leadership classes come to us and say, hey, we want to get involved and help out. So there have been some efforts already from student leadership classes. We hope to expand and make that, kind of create a protocol as to how we would actually work with each individual high school to get the leadership classes more involved in the outreach. So we did see some good examples of that already. But yeah, we don't know whether that made an impact in the intervention effect, but we think it's a promising idea.
In the back.
We didn't investigate that. Okay, the question was whether or not how a student who isn't as likely to seek out the interaction with an adult because, you know, maybe they're lower risk. We didn't investigate that specifically, but that is something that we've heard anecdotally from our staff. And how one way that we've been looking at how to impact that is to have a variety of teachers on campus. So not one of the things that we the teachers and the staff on campus said was, well, you know, we need a guy, and then we need a girl, and we need the guy that teaches PE, and then we need the girl, the female teacher that teaches health, or, you know, we wanted a variety of individual on campus. And some schools even have enlisted, like, the janitor or the front staff, the front door staff, somebody that isn't an authority in the same way. So, yeah, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. We absolutely agree with you, and we try to be incredibly sensitive to that, especially coming in, and our surveys are often during in-class time, so we acknowledge that we are taking their time, and we offer stipends to some of our schools and to some of our teachers for helping us out. So we acknowledge that, and we do our best to be as least intrusive as possible.
Question in the back. One more. Patricia.
You mean in terms of the development of the materials themselves? Okay, the question was about if we took into account whether children were from one or two parent homes. And I think in Kathleen's presentation, she mentioned that, was it two-thirds live in two-parent families? I think, you know, we did not take that into account when we were developing the parent materials because they could be for either gender parent to use. So we were not particularly targeting a one or two parent household. Typically, research finds that women are more likely to be sex educators of children. But when you think about what we were trying to impact as monitoring behaviors, I think that that's quite appropriate for both mothers and fathers. I think that single parents face more challenges over monitoring than two-parent households because there's one fewer parent to be that adult monitor. I think that people find creative ways to supplement their resources through extended family and neighbors and things like that, and that would be something that would be nice to add, and we don't yet have that kind of specificity in our materials. But yeah, I think that there are some different issues for single-parent families for sure. Sure, absolutely. I actually can't address that question. One thing that we're trying to do is provide families with more information about what programs are available after school, kind of the variety of programs, and if there's a cost associated, and the types of things that their kids can be involved with. I have no idea about federal funding for such programs. Does anyone else? Do you?
We hope with this research to make a strong case for it. Bruce?
The question was if we did any assessment to see if the clinics were friendly for gays and lesbians, and you know we did not, we are continuing the interventions, and that is an excellent area for us to go into. We have very limited information on how many kids are sexual minority students. We did ask that of the kids that had any sexual activity, and it's a very small percentage, and we were kind of really going for the main group at this point with the teen pregnancy and STD prevention, but that is an excellent area for us to kind of extend our reach. I think it's a great idea.
And I think, you know, this is something that we're updating annually, these guides, so it'll be, you know, quite possible to bring that, but it's a really important point.
Classes. So if it wasn't ESL class, usually it would work with teachers as well to not, because some kids, you know, would be embarrassed to choose a different language survey. So we worked with the teachers and said which languages this child was comfortable in, offered it in that language. If the child didn't want it in that language, we gave it in another language.
And the SNAP forms are also English and Spanish, and sometimes it would be effective if they sign it in Spanish, on the Spanish side, we kind of went up to them quietly, but we use in Spanish, and we offered in Spanish, and we have some people that.
And my second question was, do you have either new presentations or more information about y'all's program online that we can access?
We do have a project website, and it's geared towards the targets of our intervention, but I don't see why you couldn't learn more about the.
And all of our information is in the conference book, and so feel free to contact any of us and share these issues.
I think you can see the scale, the scope, and the complexity of it. You know, these four levels of intervention and all of the possible interactions between them. And, we're just beginning to look at the results now that we're through three waves and two more waves to come and the last wave with another biologic marker. So I think the analysis and what we're going to have to go through will be for a very long time, and then trying to, look for what really works. But the other thing that's really striking is this is not high cost. This is something that if it does work, will be doable. And there always will be issues. Is it how, does it work in this population over here compared to where it was measured, an effect was measured over here. But we hope it'll advance the area. Absolutely. Yeah, and you see, it's just looking for ways to distribute this material so that it's more cost effective. I mean, we actually mailed it all out, but there's no reason this couldn't go out with packages that the district sends out or reinforcing those messages. Because you see that, when you don't reinforce it, you kind of lose effect. So you got to basically continue to keep the message out there. Okay. There's no further questions. Well, thank you.